Hello, captive friends, and welcome to episode 95 of the Global Captive Podcast, supported by the EY Global Captive Network and hosted by me, Richard Kutcher. Back in September, I was invited to attend and speak at Strategic Risk Solutions Client Symposium event in Nashville, Tennessee. So I took the opportunity to check in on the independent captive manager that is obviously at an important stage of its growth and development, having received private equity investment for the first time earlier this year from Integrum Holdings. Over the course of the 2 days, I interviewed a handful of SRS professionals, including CEO Brady Young and President Ron Sulis, who we will hear from in a moment. Later, I also speak to Wendy Dine and Jeff Fitzgerald of SRS Benefit Partners, client Tony Sanchez of One Nexus, and Andrew Marzen, Managing Director at SRS. Before we get into the chat with Ron and Brady first, though, I should mention that it was announced today on 6th of November that the firm had launched SRS Altitude, a managing general underwriter based out of Zurich, to be led by experienced insurance executive Lordana Mazzaloni-Neglen, formerly of Swiss Re Corporate Solutions. This obviously did not come up in the conversation back in September, but I imagine it probably is what Brady was referring to when he discussed growth opportunities outside of captive management. You can read our coverage of that story on the Captive Intelligence website, and I have put a link in the episode show notes. But we start the conversation with me asking Ron about his promotion earlier this year to the role of Global President. So Ron, earlier this year, you were promoted to president of SRS globally, having previously spent the past 18 years as CEO of SRS in Cayman. Can you tell us a bit about this new role for you and what your focus is going to be?
Sure. The new role and how it came about was Brady Young was our CEO and president. And we were a growing company, and we kept getting bigger and bigger, and Brady was getting pulled in many different directions, and it was time to kind of split that role up. So when we talked about it, the most obvious way of splitting it up was for Brady to be concentrating on the business units themselves, and then where I came in was to help on the operational side. So it is the operational side of all business units where I'm concentrating on, but each of the business unit leaders are reporting directly to Brady. So I have more of the finance, the legal, the HR, those operational areas.
Yeah, all the really fun stuff.
All the excellent stuff.
So Brady runs, as he said, they're concentrating more on the operations. What does that leave with you to be focused on? Ron mentioned the business units there.
Yeah, Richard. So, you know, obviously supporting the growth in our core business, captive management and consulting, you know, helping expand, run that, overseeing the various offices around the world. But, you know, in addition to that, you know, our new capital partner is very interested in seeing us expand in some new areas. So I'm spending probably more time on strategy, on looking at potential M&A activities, looking at talent acquisition, and basically doing the things I like to do. So Ron's done a lot of things I didn't like to do and didn't probably do as good a job as I should have. So Ron's sorting things out and really getting us ready for, I'd say, the next phase of our development as a firm.
So you mentioned there, obviously, your new partners. We're over 6 months from the announcement that private equity firm Integrum had made a significant investment in SRS. I know you said at the time that it would be, you know, business as usual in terms of how SRS operates on a day-to-day basis. But reflecting on that six-month period, you know, has anything changed? Or what has that investment and those new partners allowed you to do differently or to accelerate?
You know, I would say in our core business as usual. Although, you know, we are working on a number of projects, as Ron puts it, to, you know, we're good, but we can be better. And we're kind of working on, you know, trying to, you know, implement some new processes, some new software tools that can help us be more efficient. And you know, we're under constant pressure from our clients and from the market just to do things faster, smarter, cheaper. And we were already doing that. And I would say, you know, our new partners are very supportive of us doing that, you know, just making our existing business better. But I would say, even though the deal just recently closed, it's been less than a month ago, we got the regulatory approval in a couple of the countries that, you know, took a little longer than others. You know, we started working together from day one as if we were already business partners. And I just think they brought, I mean, they're really smart people, a lot of experience, a lot of good contacts, a lot of good ideas. And, you know, we just thought, we've been spending a lot of time thinking about, well, what other things might make sense for us to do? Where do we want to expand? What are maybe some bad ideas? And, you know, we called it the 100-day plan. So far, so good. They've been really good to work with, really supportive. They're respectful, considerate, smart. I mean, we had our first board meeting in, when was it, early August, about a month ago. And it kind of felt like our old board meetings. It wasn't materially different.
Ron, obviously, as we just touched upon, SRS is a fast-growing organization. It has been a fast-growing organization for a while, both organically and through acquisition. From an operational perspective, how do you ensure that growth can be managed in a way that is sustainable, but also importantly ensures that you kind of continue to deliver that quality of service that you want to deliver?
As we're growing, what we've noticed is each of the domiciles have grown organically. You know, they've done a great job within their domicile. We've worked kind of on a decentralized basis and has been very successful. So where we're going to now is more to a hybrid situation where we're looking at certain of the services where we can centralize it, which tends to be those operational things. So we're building out that operational side, and that way the people that are in the domiciles can concentrate on our most important thing, which is our clients.
Brady, obviously, the ambition is to keep growing, and that's publicly stated and a big part of your personal focus. I'm not expecting you to give away any names or any kind of scoops right here on the pod, but acquisition-wise, what are the kinds of opportunities you think are of interest to you? There's not a great deal, for example, of independent captive managers left out there. There's some, but you've probably hoovered up a lot of them already, or others have. But of course, we've also seen you making moves into areas such as medical stop loss, benefits captives. Are there more captive related kind of verticals that are of interest to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think the market is pretty limited in terms of who's left out there to acquire. And we, you know, over the years, we looked at many, many firms and, you know, just decided we weren't interested, either because we didn't like, you know, we didn't like the quality of the firm, we didn't like the kind of clients they had, or we didn't think the cultural fit was right. So I don't really see us doing a lot of acquisitions in kind of the captive related space. And, you know, little side note, they're also very expensive to buy everything. The prices for any insurance services firms are really pricey right now. You see that in the brokerage valuations. But, you know, I would say the areas where we're going to focus would be, as you mentioned, medical stop loss broadly, because we think benefits and captives is got a lot of runway left. And we think, even though there's some big firms and a lot of people are focusing on it, we think we do a lot already and we can do more in that space and offer more services than what we currently provide in that space. But I would say group captives generally. I mean, we have a big group captive business already, but most of our group captives are homogeneous group captives. So they're private clubs where, you know, a particular industry or a group of people that have the same risk, same business, kind of work together, you know, use a group captive mechanism. So we would like to do more of that. We like group captives a lot, and we think we have something to offer in that space. Again, we'll probably build as opposed to buy what we do in that space. I think the other things we're looking at is maybe expanding into the MGU space in some selected areas where we think, again, we're running 1,000 insurance companies. We know what it takes to run successful insurance companies. We do a lot of the hard stuff, quite frankly, and we think, adding some of the other skills needed to run insurance companies is kind of a natural extension. And you know, in our captive management business in the last few years, like, we've gotten kind of pulled into the compliance area. Like, we've got, I don't know how many compliance people working for us around the globe now. Same with actuarial services. We didn't really intend to get into the actuarial consulting business, but just to manage captives, particularly in Europe, you have to have actuaries on staff. So we're looking kind of around, I would say at a half degree or 1 degree of separation from our core business, and we see opportunities to grow naturally.
And just lastly, Brady, all of that's really interesting. The MGU stuff, huge growing area, and obviously already some involvement with captives in that space anyway. You mentioned Europe in passing there regarding actuarial. One of your big focus areas for the past 4 years, and one I obviously keep a close eye on purely due to proximity, is Europe. Obviously, I expect we'll be having a beer together in Luxembourg in November. How pleased have you been with the progress there over the last 4 to 5 years? Is there anything about the kind of the European captive market that has surprised you, or is noticeably different from here in the US? I'm going to be presenting on that a little bit tomorrow.
The good news is I feel like we have, this is the year. We have finally turned the corner in 2023, where we're actually now have enough critical mass of clients and revenue where we're fully covering our costs. We're not making a lot of money, but at least we're not losing money. And what surprised me, quite frankly, is how long it took and how difficult it has been to kind of break into the European market. And part of it, I guess you could blame COVID, you could blame other reasons. Maybe we didn't have the right strategy or right people or the right approach initially, but I feel really good with kind of where we are now. And, month by month, we're getting new wins, invited to compete for takeover opportunities. We're doing a lot of feasibility work. We're seeing some growth in new markets that weren't traditionally viewed as kind of captive rich, so obviously Germany, some of Italy, France is pretty hot right now. There's some interesting stuff going on in Spain. We're very, very bullish on Europe, and I think you'll be hearing more in the coming months about some new things that we're trying to do to really, take it to the next level in Europe and Europe-centric. So,
really good to have you on the Global Captive Podcast, and thanks for having me here in Nashville.
Great to have you in Nashville, and it's exciting to see what you're doing on the podcast, and keep up the good work.
And Ron, thanks for coming on to have your debut on the Global Captive Podcast.
Thank you very much.
So thank you to Ron and Brady for giving me their time and sharing their ideas regarding the future growth of SRS. Next up, we hear from captive owner Tony Sanchez, CEO of One Nexus Environmental, that owns a fairly unique captive in Oklahoma, and Andrew Marson, who works on that account. So, Tony, welcome on to the Global Captive Podcast. We've actually spoken a little bit about One Nexus on the podcast before, of your colleague Jerry was on a few months ago, and we've written about One Nexus because it's a really interesting Oklahoma captive story. But first, for listeners who haven't heard a bit about One Nexus before, can you just tell us a bit about who One Nexus are and what you guys do?
Yeah, One Nexus is a company that was founded in 2021 with the goal and mission to provide a viable solution to oil and gas companies decommissioning obligations and liabilities. Currently, there's not an industry-wide solution for plugging oil and gas wells, decommissioning surface facilities and production facilities. And we could get into much of it later, but it was founded in 2021 to come to market with a solution for that. It was in 2022 that we got our captive up and running, and really for us as a startup, the captive is the core of our business. It is our business.
So in terms of it being the core of your business, it is that initial, that real business enabler. So it allows you to do the things that you want to do. So why was a captive solution the solution that you landed on?
Yeah, very well said. It's the business enabler. So we were looking around for how to structure a solution. This is a financial solution much akin to pension liability that companies have. And I have an oil and gas background and a finance and accounting background. And so the world of captives is something I've been introduced to just in the last couple of years and am learning a lot about it and learning the different things that you could utilize a captive for. And through guidance and advice through people we've been working with, including the SRS folks, we've sort of formed the business around the captive. And ultimately, what we wanted to achieve was a solution that had longevity and duration to it, was trust and secure. And we kept coming back to, we needed to design a life insurance policy equivalent, but for oil and gas and energy producing assets. And we kept coming back to insurance. And ultimately, the insurance solution that provided the most flexibility was a captive insurance company. And that's when we were introduced to the people from SRS, and we ultimately landed in Oklahoma as a venue and established ourselves in 2022. It's called One Nexus Oklahoma Captive Corp. It's backed from a risk-based standpoint, capital standpoint, by Munich Re. And we started underwriting policies earlier this year in 2023.
Fantastic. We'll come back to that first year of business and that growth in a second. Andrew, I know you're based down in, don't be fooled by the accent. You are based down in Texas. And so I know you work with a lot of energy clients, but this sounds like quite a unique kind of insurance captive proposition. Had you come across anything similar to this before? And why were they a particularly interesting captive client for you guys to work with?
It's a very unique unique structure, unique type of business, and quite frankly, I'd never come across it before, and I don't think anybody within SRS had ever come across this type of scenario before. So when Tony approached me several years ago, it was certainly something that piqued my interest, and obviously was eager to get to work with Tony and explore how we could find a solution to the overall problem, and obviously looking to Oklahoma to assist in structuring a captive and forming the captive in Oklahoma. And as Tony mentioned, we formed the captive in 2022, and it's been a great experience so far, and looking forward to what the future will bring for SRS and obviously One Nexus going forward.
When you are dealing with kind of a new risk, a new kind of structure idea, a new risk idea for to put in a captive, what are the important things to, I guess, work with the regulator on, work with the client on, to make sure everyone's comfortable that this is going to work and the right capital model is in place? Kind of what are the factors that go into making that a success?
Well, I think it's really working within the constraints of the law, because, regardless of what the regulator or we may want to accomplish wherever we go, we've obviously got to work within the parameters of the law in that particular domicile. So it's really looking at the problem that we're trying to solve and seeing how we can fit that thing within the law, and obviously working to manipulate the situation to make sure that everything fits and that everybody's happy with the way things are structured, and really just getting his heads together to come up with that solution collectively to achieve that goal.
So Tony, you mentioned obviously you've started writing policies now. You just said off mic, you said you feel like you're really making progress now and you're starting to get a lot of interest. So just explain for us, are we talking about, you haven't got to name names, of course, but are we talking about, big oil and gas companies that have wells that would need these policies? What are the kinds of businesses that you're wanting to work with and provide this service to?
Essentially, I'll talk about some use cases here, because essentially it's one product, and this is a financial assurance product at its core that guarantees that a certain amount of funding is available in the future whenever it's time to retire an energy producing asset and the associated facilities that come with it. So we've got a variety of use cases. In oil and gas, you have state regulations that require financial assurance. That mostly comes in the form of surety bonds, but there's more private bonding taking place. And so private bonding is taking place where companies that sell oil and gas assets to other producers want to protect themselves from those liabilities coming back to them. So they require, typically in the past, a surety bond to cover for that risk. We've come to market with a use case for this product that basically enables the buyer to provide the financial assurance while at the same time building cash value. So if they do the things they're supposed to do, and the time comes to plug the well, for instance, there's money there within the policy to plug the well. Whereas the alternative is to pay surety bond premiums, which basically leave the system, and then they have to come out of pocket to plug the well anyway. So it's a much more efficient way to use their capital. That's one of the use cases. The other use case is it's not uncommon for oil and gas operators to have what are called non-operating working interest partners. So they have partners in their wells. And typically, once the well reaches the end of its life, it's not producing any more revenue, and they get the final bill to the final bill to plug it, there's risk that that owner is simply not going to meet his obligations. And this is a joint and several liability. And so we've gotten some really strong early interest from producers that want to start essentially pre-funding that liability. So they could pre-fund it at a discount because they're pre-funding it early. But they're also protecting themselves against getting stuck holding the bag for the entirety of the costs. So it's really checking off two boxes there for them. And those, I'd say, are the two main use cases. We're mostly doing onshore oil and gas producing assets right now. We've got a large and building pipeline as we educate the market in what we're doing. But we've also found ourselves offshore in the Gulf of Mexico as assets have traded, as financial assurance requirements have tightened and gone up. People have come to us for a better way to do this.
I'm interested to know what your insurance distribution model is, yeah. Right? To find new business, is it just because I know that you have that background in the oil and gas industry, you have the context, how do you get out there and sell the product?
These early days, that's still very much, I'd say, a learning process. We're working with brokers, bankers, lawyers who are involved. Sometimes the companies themselves come to us. I had a water disposal company reach out via the website. So it comes from all. When I first started in this, I thought for sure the ideal distribution was going to be the retail insurance brokers. And what we found there is that we have certain broker partners, one in particular who's been with us since almost day one, as an advisor, really, but really, you know, he believes in this model and believes that this is the long-term right way to do this. And so he's been a champion. And I would say it tends to be more of the individual within the distribution channel itself that in this early stage has proven to be the advocate. So whether it's an individual that works for or is a partner at a insurance brokerage firm or a lawyer or a banker who wants to protect his client from some risk, or a C-suite executive who says, this is something I want to do for the company. I'd say the jury's not out yet in terms of what the ideal, most effective distribution channel is. And that's just a long-winded way of saying we'll talk to anybody who calls.
Andrew, is this a good example of we've just been down in the hall listening to the morning presentations, and then it ended with Brady presenting some awards to some different captive clients of yours at SRS, and they're all very different, right? And this case here that Tony's outlining is a very different case. Is this a great example of just how, obviously, we know the cliche, not every captive looks the same. Once you've seen one captive, you've seen one captive. Is this a great example of just how flexible and diverse the kind of captive market can be and captive solutions can be?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a perfect example of just the innovative nature of the captive industry as a whole. I mean, I've been in this industry for 17 years now, and things are just changing all the time. There's new ideas coming forward. There's new techniques. There's a new way of doing things that are just amazing every day. And that's one of the things that I like most about working in the captive industry is it never gets boring because there's so much new stuff coming across all the time that really keeps everybody interested. And this is a perfect example of how the captive industry can come and solve a real life, real world problem for many, many people and many, many different companies.
So just lastly, Tony, obviously you talked a lot about oil and gas there. What struck me is we talk a lot in the news at the moment about, you know, a wind turbine doesn't last forever, or, you know, solar panels have a shelf life. I imagine tidal energy will have a similar issue as well, but wind turbines is one that really sticks in my mind. Can you see this financing approach having applicability in the renewable sector as well?
Oh, very much so. Absolutely. Oil and gas wells tend to be very long duration in nature. The ones that die young die at 20, 30 years. Some of them will go for 100 years. In the renewable space, you have solar, and we have had some inbounds with solar. Wind is another obvious one. But what we're positioning this company's mission around is to provide this financial assurance for any energy producing project in the industry. So eventually I could see us absolutely getting into the solar assurance business, similarly for wind turbines. We don't determine how those are ultimately decommissioned. There's specialists and engineers that do that. What we do is we solve the financial side of it. We'll finance that decommissioning liability. So the out-of-pocket expenses that come at the end of that project's life, our goal is to basically provide the financing for that and to make sure that that capital is there long after we're gone for a lot of these projects, because those durations are so far out in the future. But yeah, you went straight to the point. This what we're doing in oil and gas could absolutely be ported to a variety of different industries. I'd say the common denominator, as I think about where I want this to go, is energy producing, right? I think that the energy needs of the planet are increasing. They're not getting smaller, particularly as second and third world countries convert to newer first world type lifestyles and electrification of everything. You know, that you got to have equipment and things that make that electricity, and those things don't last forever. And they need to be upgraded and replaced and fixed and all that sort of stuff. And that's where we come in.
Always good to hear those unique captive business models, and it will be fascinating to see how One Nexus develops in the future. So our last discussion is with Jeff Fitzgerald, who returned to the firm in August as managing director of a new division, SRS Benefit Partners, and Wendy Dine, an experienced benefit specialist with SRS for 11 years. So, Jeff, it was announced in August this year that right. You had rejoined Strategic Risk Solutions, and in your new role, you are leading a new division, SRS Benefit Partners. Can you tell us a bit about the focus of this new business unit and your role in leading it?
So I think SRS Business Partners, in the shortest way we could describe it, it's the support, growth, and development of employee benefit captives, primarily group, but also able and interested to do single parent as well. The focus is really on working with defined SRS agency partners. You know, SRS has built a long tenure of having, you know, really tight partners, and really what they've done over time is help them on most of their captives, except what is traditionally be considered more traditional health insurance and employee benefits work. So I was brought in to help with Wendy, brought in to help expand that out for them.
Employee benefits is quite a broad term, and nowadays I think can encompass quite a lot of different things. And I think it can often be confused with medical stop loss perhaps, or maybe it's including it. So in this new division, what benefits and types of programs are we talking about?
So we're primarily focused on self-funded medical, which would include a portion of stop loss, absolutely. We are not resigned to only doing that. I think there are other coverages that are possible, but I think all of them will have some form of self-insurance, some form of stop loss or reinsurance, and some form of captive behind it. Whether or not it is only major medical, I can't say that, but the focus for right now is that.
And you mentioned both single parent and group captive programs. You want to work with the single parents in under kind of SRS management and build group captives for benefits?
Correct. You know, I think one of the things to recognize about SRS in general is that outside of the captive space, It has really focused on claims management. It's really focused on its work on MSL through the ownership of an MGU. And so part of this is not only a means to expand our captive footprint, but also to expand our risk management as well as stop loss footprint as well.
So, Wendy, you've been working on employee benefits in this space with SRS for the past 11 years. Why did you think now is the kind of right time for benefits to have this dedicated practice and division focused on it within SRS?
Sure. So for many years, we provided consultation to help agencies build their own captive program. What we found was happening over this time period was some agencies wanted to start something, but they couldn't do it on their own. And then they were asking for a solution. And so it came to the time where we had to look at our options and we decided, you know, our clients and broker partners are asking for a solution and we need to build one.
Why does employee benefits continue to be such a big growth area for captives, do you think, Wendy? And do you believe there is still a lot more kind of captive benefits business to go and get?
Employers are still burdened by the cost of health insurance, and it's on them. It's not going away. It's not a line item that they can pass off to anyone else. So they've definitely seen the expenses grow, and some have taken pause when it comes to self-insuring, not necessarily wanting to do it. But now they're getting educated, and so they're feeling more comfortable with self-insuring, and then a captive adds additional protections and cost management to the program. I think we'll continue to see growth. You just look at statistics of employers in the small and mid-size employer range, and we've only just scratched the surface on how many employers are out there that could be in these type of programs.
And I might add that I think some of this is actually less about captive growth than it is more about the frustrations that, as Wendy said, small to mid-market employers feel. And captives provide a portion of that solution. And so this is really generated much more so by the frustration in that side of the market, and then captives being solution rather than this being captive driven.
Do you think there's an element, Jeff? I mean, obviously we talk a lot in the traditional kind of captive space that if you're a widget maker, you don't necessarily want to be in the business of insurance, but maybe you end up being forced down there because the insurance market isn't fit for purpose for you, or you can do it better yourself by support of people like SRS and other insurance captive partners. I imagine a company thinking about and being open to the idea of getting involved in health insurance can sound even more scary, right? Because it's a highly regulated, very serious area to be involved in. Does it sometimes take a bit of hand-holding to get companies comfortable with the idea of being involved in the health benefits insurances they provide to their employees?
Absolutely. And not to be cheeky about it, pardon so I bar your accent, but that it's not that people are calling and saying, I love captives.
Yeah.
They're calling and saying that my health insurance is necessary, expensive, and complicated, and I don't know what my other solutions are. So I think the market is forcing people to get more involved and engaged. Captives, by providing the stability of the captive pool, but also being able to access cost containment and risk management vendors often that they cannot do at their regular size, allows them to do that in a manner that is less frightening than it would be if they were on their own.
And I think regulation is also making employers take on more fiduciary responsibility. So if they're not doing right by their employees and their dependents, then they have to look at solutions. And I think it's coming down to finding solutions now to meet everyone's needs.
So once those clients have landed on those solutions, Wendy, what are the kind of keys to get those programs right once they're put in place? Because as we said, it is serious business.
I think it's engagement is one of the big ones. So, you know, just watching your financials month to month, that's not going to be enough engagement. I think learning from peer groups is one of the benefits of the captive vehicle. And I think that will continue. And people like to hear success stories and then implement those success stories themselves.
Well, thank you to all of our guests and to Brady and SRS for inviting me to Nashville this year. Certainly an interesting couple of years, I expect, for the firm ahead, and one we'll be watching closely. If you want to stay up to date with this story and receive the latest relevant, credible and informed captive insurance analysis from around the world, do make sure you are visiting captiveintelligence.io regularly and signed up to our twice weekly newsletter. There are links in the episode show notes. In the meantime, stay safe, stay well, and see you next time, captives.